When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
McGovern is well known to people all across Chelmsford as the co-founder of Call to Be Kind. The community project supports rough sleepers in the city and across the southeast. As the problem of homelessness has grown, so has the role the project has had to take on. In this episode, Brian explains how the project came to be what it is today, and he also tells us what motivated him to take action as cities and towns across the UK face a similar issue with rough sleeping. He also explains why he believes society has failed, with people in the centre of Chelmsford having to resort to doorways in a bid for shelter as they sleep out in the open. Brought to you by Essex Live, this is Humans of Chelmsford, and this is Brian McGovern's story. Thanks so much for coming onto the podcast and telling us all about Call to Be Kind Chelmsford, as well as your own dealings with homelessness and that sort of situation here in the city as well. Lots of stuff that we're going to go through and talk about in this episode, but we'll start off with Call to Be Kind itself, which you're a co-founder of.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll, my first question will be, how did it first come about, and why was it that you felt you needed to start up something like that in order to change things?
It started off literally as me and four of my mates in a pub, and we were just saying, hang on a minute, there seems to be an awful lot of rough sleepers about. And that was about 5 years ago. And we looked into a few things, and we spoke to the local authority, and we spoke to groups like Sanctus and Chess, and we realised that there was a massive gap for people, particularly with mental health issues and addiction problems, that couldn't access services. So we felt that we wanted to do something about it. And then Marion, one of my friends, said, the Rucksack Project, which was a national movement at the time, is something really practical. So that was the route we wanted to go down, because we're not handling cash. We didn't have to register as a charity. So we done that. And I think in our first year, we got about 330 full rucksacks donated by members of the public, which we were able to distribute throughout Essex. And then we've done that ever since. But after two or three years of doing that, we didn't want to be identified just by one project throughout the year. So subsequently, my daughter was doing a dissertation at the time for her degree in fashion, marketing and communication. And to my surprise, she called it Call to Be Kind. And it was about how the fashion industry was using social media and their message about kindness, because corporate responsibility seems to be quite a buzz at the moment. So she got a first, and subsequently I thought, if it's good enough for a first, then I'll have that. And the guys agreed, and we became Call to Be Kind. And we felt we had to take action, simply because no one else is looking after the rough sleepers you see in doorways. And that's pretty much the story.
It's something we've talked about a fair few times on this podcast before, is the homelessness situation. Yep. In Chelmsford. bearing in mind how that situation has progressed, how would you sum up the homelessness situation in the city to someone who maybe isn't from here or maybe doesn't really know?
Well, initially, when we first started doing outreach, there was probably, and this is probably 4 years ago, 5 years ago maybe, there was probably about 15, 16 people that we were seeing on a regular basis. We now estimate it's around 50 people. So, and the...
And that's just in the city centre?
Just in the city centre. As I walked up to here today, so from the bottom of Molsham Street to here, I saw seven rough sleepers, which I know. And that's without looking for them. And I know others are out and about. So it has increased dramatically, and the figures from Crisis and Shelter back that up. And the statistics that the government put out of 4,000, I think it's 4,751 rough sleepers in the whole of the UK is based upon a snapshot of one night where one official goes out in a very limited area and counts people. And I think last in Chelmsford it was 14 rough sleepers, which of course is total fiction. And the response from the previous administration was, well, we know that's the case, that there are more rough sleepers. So it doesn't seem a particularly reliable or even realistic. Well, what's the point? Because if we don't know the true extent of the problem, how are we ever going to fix it?
Is there a particular unique problem in Chelmsford compared to other parts of the country based on what you've seen, because obviously you have a lot more, I suppose, engagement than, say, those officials who do have that one snapshot on a particular night?
Well, I mean, we do a head count every week because we do regular outreach. And a lot of these people we've known for a number of years, and we know where they're likely to be and what their habits are and this, that and the other. Thankfully, the new council administration have asked for our help, and we took part in the first ever Rough Sleepers workshop. I think there was about 25 organisations, including Essex Police, Sanctus, Chess, and various other organisations. And as a result of that, finally, we're pulling together.
Across the country, we've seen these numbers get bigger, even if it is just those snapshot numbers.
Yep.
They're all... Everywhere it seems to be on the rise. Can we pinpoint a reason as to why that situation has gone the way it has and that we're here today and seeing so many people on the street?
There's a one-word answer to that, and that would be austerity. In real terms, since 2012, I think there's been £600 million reduction in mental health services. I was watching a news report this morning where they're telling me that there's so many vacancies for psychiatrists and people who can support people with issues. So we have this rhetoric. James Brockenshire announced quite recently that £100 million are being spent on housing services. That's a drop in the ocean, quite frankly, in comparison just to what they've done to mental health. However, with the austerity that we have, with the reduction in mental health services, with the reduction of housing services, council housing stock has been sold off, and it's payback time, I'm afraid. This is not rocket science. I'm not saying it's an easy thing to do, but we believe in a policy called Housing First, which has been proven to work in places like Finland and Canada. And we've piloted it five times in the UK. And again, it's proven to work. And in the medium term, it's actually far cheaper to deal with people with addiction problems by getting them in houses first, rather than dealing with the consequence of not, i.e. crime, i.e. Health services, this, that and the other. However, in reality, there's not enough houses. So £100 million doesn't even touch the surface. If you spread that across the UK, How many houses does that build, and where are they going to go? And then you're going to have NIMBY saying, I don't want social housing on my nice estate. So it's not an easy issue to solve. However, it's not insurmountable.
It's that the housing numbers has often been mentioned as a problem, but dealing with and speaking to some of the people who've been in a homelessness situation or rough sleeping themselves, and a lot of them do seem to have mental health issues, mm-hmm. as a real caveat or catalyst, if you like, mm-hmm. for that. And is it probably a neglect of mental health services that has helped contribute to that as well? Because it is so much harder, I suppose, to deal with an addiction, mm-hmm. if you are out on the street in a vulnerable position, yeah. first and foremost.
Well, that's what Housing First is all about. And so these people are left on the street, and then they get involved in criminality, and they're quite likely to be abused themselves, attacked, or whatever it may well be. And on it goes, and then they come into contact with other addicts and dealers and this sort of stuff. Housing First principle works the other way around, whereby you put these people in housing and then you offer a wraparound support. So whether that's making sure that their bills are being paid, making sure that they attend appointments, simple stuff that you and I would take for granted.
The structure of everyday life, yeah. if you like.
And supporting them through it. So it's quite intensive, but the reality of it is it's better for these people. It's proven to be far more successful than what we're currently operating with, and it goes on that it's cheaper for the nation. So it makes perfect sense, but it needs political will, and that comes from a national level. So there needs to be a huge investment in social housing. One of my pet hates is the word affordable housing, or the words, should I say, affordable housing, because the majority of affordable housing is shared ownership or help to buy, that sort of stuff. For the likes of some of the guys that you and I have met over the years, that's totally
it's not
unrealistic.
Affordable.
What they need... Housing is a right. It shouldn't be a privilege or a reward for behaving yourself. But so, and what we're operating at the moment is quite the opposite. So you behave yourself, you not be a heroin addict, and we'll put you in a house maybe. It's not realistic.
And I kind of mention that and bring it back to a local level.
Yeah,
Rob O'Connor's death in February 2018 now. So we're a year and a half on from that incident where he was a rough sleeper and mm-hmm. did sadly pass away,
yep.
During a freezing cold night as well.
Yep.
Did that serve as a wake-up call to people in the city, or did it start off as a boost and has it sort of diminished a bit?
Well, yeah, it's interesting you say that. And immediately after Rob's death, and I knew Rob, not particularly well, but I did know him, and I was privileged enough to hold a vigil for him. And in the short term, yes, it was a wake-up call. But however, a lot of the people, including the guy that was sharing the doorway that night and found him dead, are still on the streets. So whilst there's this outpouring of grief initially, that dwindles. And we've had a mild summer, we've had a mild winter last year. And I was honestly fearful. We had a bad winter last year. I knew of three or four people who were on the streets that I was genuinely thought that they'd lose their life. So, yeah, again, it's about rhetoric. It's about action.
But then here we are in October now. Yeah. Winter's approaching again. Does that same fear come in for people like you?
Absolutely. And... I talk to a lot of my colleagues at Call to Be Kind, and we work closely with Help the Homeless Chelmsford, and they've got genuine concerns for some of the guys that we know. So there does need to be more beds. There doesn't need to be beds without conditionality.
Do people often forget that there are real people behind homelessness stats as well, because I mean, you can be that person that's just, you know, gunned down the high street with your blinkers on, mm-hmm. and probably forget mm-hmm. that there are individual stories behind every single number.
Yeah, and I think probably 5 years ago I was probably guilty of that as well. It's only through getting to know these people on a personal level, and they are people. They're not just rough sleepers or rubbish. They're people, and some of the people I've met have been incredibly talented, incredibly articulate and bright. I've had concert pianists. I've had TV news reporters. I've had a professional golfer. All of these people have real stories, and then they've fallen on hard times, bad luck, bad decisions, whatever it may well be. One of the things that Call to Be Kind is really keen to promote is to understand that these are actually real people as opposed to rubbish. So I think a lot of people are getting that, but there are also people that fall out of a pub on a Saturday night and think it's funny to go and abuse a rough sleeper. And I hear about that nearly every week, where people have been urinated upon, people have been spat at, people have been kicked or punched or whatever, simply because they're a rough sleeper.
And the rubbish line that you use there as well is one that I've heard rough sleepers say how they feel when yeah. people treat them yeah. that way
and
as well.
And it doesn't help, because the language that is often used by people in power is almost demonising people. So there is this do not feed the pigeons attitude, which almost legitimises people's behaviour towards rough sleepers and why they get the abuse they do. Beggars operate like they're a white lightning mafia or something, operate in this area. For God's sake, they're trying to get enough to feed themselves. You know, these are not inherently bad people. Very often, these people are the people that have been let down by society back to their childhood. There's a disproportionate amount of people that I speak to who have come out of the care system. And then they come out, and at a certain age, they're left, despite the fact that they've been through early trauma or whatever. Then there'll be other people who have been in violent relationships, and their only escape has been to go to the streets. So that's not... But ultimately, they're the same as you and I. I'm lucky enough to have the support of a great family, and I've got lots of good friends. But some of these people have none of that. So what do? When you fall out of luck.
Yeah, when your safety net's been taken away, essentially.
Yeah, and one of the sad things about it is, and I've known this to happen on more than one occasion, is whereby people are displaced deliberately by a local authority. So they will actually pay a train fare or a bus fare or a taxi to take them out of one council area and put them in another.
On that note then, and considering how much Call to Be Kind has grown in the relatively short time span, I suppose, it's actually been going, do you almost inherently feel an extra sense of responsibility on your shoulders and the outreach workers' shoulders as well?
We never imagined, when we set up the Rucksack Project and then indeed Call to Be Kind, that we would be getting involved to the level we are. So now we're talking to leaders of councils, we're talking to a local MP. We're lobbying hard. We get a lot of media attention. That was never our intention. We just wanted to go out and help a few guys out. But we soon realised that we were actually quite good at raising issues and highlighting issues and making things better for people. Not one of us has ever taken a penny out of Call to Be Kind. I think I paid for a £60 for a ticket to go to Bristol last year to go and look at a project down there. But we don't have any premises. We do this out of a want, and we feel it's necessary. Of course, personally, I feel a huge amount of responsibility because I've got some really good relationships with these guys, and I understand their problems far more than I did 2, 3, 4 years ago. So, yeah, it runs me bloody rapid.
Well, I can imagine that, because you're personally invested in these people, and then they're not just homeless people. But then I suppose when you do say some or see someone getting into a house or getting themselves better in one way or another, that must also be equally rewarding for the endless hours, the amount of work that you have been doing as a group.
It is rewarding. My fear is that without the correct support, very often those people will lose the house they were put into. So that again goes back to the housing first model.
And as we record this, we're, 3 days away from World Homeless Day?
Yeah.
How important a day is that for raising awareness? And do we need more days like that, where we do constantly push the issue in front of people's faces and eyes and talk about what we need to do to try and solve this problem, or at least make it better?
World Homeless Day is incredibly important. We live in a westernised society which is one of the wealthiest on the planet, yet we're prepared to see people who are cold, who are hungry and sick on our streets, and yet we walk past them. Why isn't an ambulance coming along, picking these up and taking them somewhere safe, warm and dry? We've got the budget. If we want to invade a country, funny enough, we find millions and billions of pounds to do that. So why can't we deal with this issue? If there was a village in Essex that was washed out with 15,000, 20,000 people that were displaced, I'm pretty sure the government would be able to find the money somehow to help that situation out. Yet we're being told that the current government are going to solve homelessness, rough sleeping, by 2027. I've taken that with a very large pinch of salt, quite frankly. But why would it take that period of time when we could do it tomorrow? Albeit, I'm not saying it's simple, but it's doable. It's not beyond the wit of man.
And I think back to the statistics last year as well about the amount of people that had now died on the streets across the country. I think 2018 there'd been 10 recorded in Essex. But of course those are the ones we know about and have noticed. And I remember, I think, a quote from you at the time when I spoke to you about it, and you said it was the amount of people that had died was leveled to a national tragedy or a national disaster. Yet for some reason that was bypassing everyone's attention, whereas if it had been a hurricane or something somewhere else,
Anchorage or anything like that. I don't know how this is being missed by the media as a whole. I guess there's a lot of other news items going on at the moment, as we all know. But it was revealed this, I think, last week that nearly 800 deaths on our streets that we know about. I mean, that's nearly three a day. Three people a day are dying unnecessarily. Yeah, we ignore it. It doesn't make sense.
So, I mean, we've spoken a lot about the housing first model and things like that, but are there short-term fixes that we can implement now that might make the situation better, or should we be focusing long-term solutions and, I suppose, bulking up the housing numbers that don't seem to be there right now?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the locally, what there needs to be is wet and dry safety. So if you are suffering from addiction problems, there should be somewhere safe you can go in the winter. So there needs to be beds for that. CHESS provide a service, they need more beds. So that's a short-term solution. But there are projects going on throughout the UK, such as the one I visited in Bristol with Jasper Thompson, whereby they're looking at innovative solutions such as the modular homes that are built out of shipping containers.
And we had the double-decker bus that they've got as well, yeah, which they converted.
Absolutely, and there's buses all over the UK now. So that's the short-term stuff. So we don't have another unnecessary death in Chelmsford. But on the long term, yeah, we need more houses, but that's going to take time. Now, we're advising the council on rough sleeping policy. There's currently the review strategy on rough sleeping that we consulted on, and that will become legislation unless there's a major change. And we, the council now do seem to have a lot more will to commit stuff to them, but they can only rely on funding from central government, so it needs to come from the top down.
And one last question as well, before I wrap this up, and that's about Call to Be Kind itself and its work in the in Chelmsford. How do you see the charity, if it is a charity now, because it's not a charity, is it? But no. We always refer to it as one,
yeah,
because it's essentially become one. Where do you see it going in the next while, or is the dream, I suppose, to see its responsibility dwindle?
Well, first of all, we're an incorporated community project. We chose not to go down the route of charity because there's an awful lot of red tape involved in that, and expense in order, because then you've got to do various things, and also it limits your activity in terms of what you can and can't say. We're very free to criticise whoever we like at the moment. The moment we become a charity, we're limited on that. Where do we see ourselves going? Well, it's been a bit of a roller coaster over the last 4 years. Where we'll be in 4 years' time, 5 years' time, who knows? Our main intention is not to exist. But the only time that will happen is when we eradicate rough sleeping in the UK. Until that point, we'll carry on doing what we're doing, and we've got projects going on all over the place, and there's a million and one things that we're doing and ideas that we have. We would like possibly to be able to share that with other towns and cities in the UK. So there might be a Call to Be Kind one day in Bristol or Birmingham or Brighton or wherever, so we can share ideas and encourage people to act kindly.
And I suppose on personal responsibility as well, you being thrust in front of the media a lot of the time, mm-hmm. did you ever envisage that happening when you first set out, talking to people like me?
No, I didn't. And it's been quite a wild journey, to be totally honest. And, you know, I've been privileged enough to get support from the likes of Jonathan Pye, Attila the Stockbroker, and I've spoken in front of 500 or 600 people at various events and this, that and the other.
Well, you've chosen a perfect way to end that. but again, it's a testament to the work that that Call to Be Kind is doing, that it does get the recognition as it has. And of course, the recent Panic Awards was an example of that, because that was the fundraiser that they'd chosen for that night. So it just kind of shows the work that is going into Chelmsford and trying to improve the situation of so many people who have fallen on hard times.
Panic Awards was a fun event, and we really enjoyed doing that, and they raised quite a few quid for us, and of course I had the benefit of the privilege of giving young Jacob, our child ambassador, his award for his outstanding work with the community. The Panic Awards now are making the Call to Be Kind Community Spirit Award an annual thing. So, yeah, that's nuts. I mean, I know a lot of people within the arts and what have you, just through being in Chelmsford all my life and hanging about the wrong crowd. But they've been... And that's very much at the key of... or at the core of what Call to Be Kind was built on, is using fantastic musicians and comedians and all of that, and the artistic community of Chelmsford have really got behind Call to Be Kind, and we wouldn't be anywhere near where we are without that. And we do regular music events at Chelmsford City Football Club, for example, or at the United Brethren Pub. I've got very good at blagging stuff, so and finding a way into an organisation or whatever. Because we've had to, because we didn't have any money. But we're now looking at the Lockwood project, and I think I've spoken to you about that before. And we're working with the local council. We've got a potential site. I can't say too much at this point because we need to go through a planning process, etc., which is a bit of a nuisance. But if that is pulled off, that will be the first in the UK. Where someone, it's not ideal because ideally you'd like to give them a home, but at least they've got somewhere to put their stuff overnight or during the day. So the advantage of that is not only does it keep their stuff safe, we will be engaging with them and there will be some conditions attached to that, i.e. you can't store any drugs in there. And then from the council's point of view, or certainly for the likes of Bond Street where we're sitting here today, they don't have rucksacks littering their shiny stores. So it's a win-win for everyone. And hopefully that will be the step from street to locker to to housing.
Exactly. And hopefully it's the start, like you say, to a great end result. And with that, I'll bring this particular podcast episode to an end. Before I go, if people wanted to get involved with Call to Be Kind, where can they find out more information? Where should they go?
Right, you can either go to our website, which is www.c2bk.co.uk, or you can visit our Facebook page. If you message us, we tend to be very responsive and we'll get in touch. We have an education program now, so we have my former history teacher, who I think you met actually, didn't you, Howard?
Oh, I did, yes.
Yeah. Howie, who goes into schools on a regular basis, and he talks about rough sleeping and the dangers of that and drugs and alcohol and all those things to kids. And funny enough, the kids get it. The older people sometimes can be quite cynical because they think, oh no, you must have a Porsche around the corner or whatever. The kids just go, this is wrong. So we do that on a regular basis. So if anyone wants us to go into their school, give an assembly, we'll happily do that. I'm often asked to meet with young people and talk to them and explain what's what and how they can get involved. And they get so much energy out of it. And it's, of course, it's educating people for the future generation as well.
Exactly. Plenty of worthwhile causes there. And lastly, thank you, Brian, for coming on to the podcast.
It's been my pleasure. And it's always good to see you.
Exactly. And telling us about your story and about Call to Be Kind in long form on a podcast. So
very long, actually.
Exactly.
35 minutes.
Yep. So thanks so much. And we look forward to seeing what you do next.
Great. Thanks.
A big thank you to Brian for taking the time out to speak with us on this episode. You can find a link to Call to Be Kind in the show notes. Humans of Chelmsford is available on the Essex Live website, Apple Podcasts, Spotify and Acast. And don't forget you can follow the show on social media. We'll be back next week with the third episode of the current series. Make sure you join us then.